Here we are on the air. Larry Parepa from the Sonics.
You got the last name right.
Hey, hey. Well, you came from a musical family, right?
Yeah. My mom strummed guitar, primarily with my uncle, who actually did a lot of recording, made a lot of acetate back in the 50s, and some of that stuff involved some electronics that he was communicating back and forth with Les Paul, actually, on it. Yeah, he was a little bit ahead of the times.
Your uncle knew Les Paul, then?
Yeah. I don't know how well. I just know that there were some communications back and forth because they both played guitar and they both were heavy into electronics. He was trying to do some multi-tracking, I know, back in the 50s, and he was doing most of this in his own home, my uncle. But I don't recall. I was too young to recall exactly what happened.
Do you know what kind of music it was?
Probably Texas Swing.
Uh-huh. You don't have any recordings of those, do you?
No, I sure wish I did, though.
Too bad. So how old were you when you moved out to Seattle?
Well, I've always been in the Seattle area. We lived originally just 35 or 40 miles south of Seattle. Born and raised in the rain.
Oh, yeah, you got that there. You know, it's funny because a lot of the rock critics, you know, they go, Nirvana is the heir to the Sonics and Soundgarden and all that, but I don't see any resemblance except that they're from a rainy area also.
I hear a resemblance only in terms, sometimes like the patterns, the simple patterns they would use on chording, but also the fact that it's not clean chords, it was that grungy sound. And I guess a lot of the local ones say that they were influenced by it. I don't know.
I just think it's great. It's like the best music to come down the pike in the past 30 years. I don't know. It's just incredible. You guys, it's almost like the Trashmen were picking up on the Jerry Lee Lewis thing, and I kind of feel like you guys were picking up on the Little Richard kind of feel. You're doing a lot of R&B. Even your originals had an R&B kind of feel.
Mm-hmm. I think really some of the other members, more than myself, I think Jerry Rosley, the singer, would say that Little Richard was a big influence. But him and Bob and Rob, the sax player, and probably my brother, Andy, listened to R&B. And we played some of that prior, in a version of the Sonics, prior to the one with Jerry Rosley and Rob and Bob. I didn't personally listen to R&B. I listened to mostly guitar songs. But I couldn't replicate it, so I did what I could do.
So what kind of stuff were you into, like surf music and...
No, not really surf. Ventures, but Ventures weren't doing surf back then. It could be Link Wray.
Mm-hmm.
A few of his tunes. Bill Doggett, Bill Black, Combo, even Dwayne Eddy. Anybody who was playing guitar, because I just love the sound of a guitar. And so in the Northwest, I don't know about the East Coast, but in the Northwest, even in the early 60s, it was primarily instrumental groups, and you really played instrumentals. And then sometimes you'd bring a singer on to sing a few songs. But
that was because you were doing, like, teenage dances and all? Is that why?
Yeah, but every place you played was that way. I mean, even the larger clubs, which were at that time, teen dances, everybody played just instrumentals, which is why the local band The Wailers was so instrumental for us and a lot of people, because they did write a lot of instrumentals early on. So we all did that, or Freddie King later on, when he came out with a really good guitar album. We would play basically all those instrumentals, and as time evolved, then it became more customary to have vocalists primarily, but you'd throw in an instrumental occasionally, kind of a reverse. So personally, I was influenced only by guitar and really couldn't play some of the things that I heard, so I ended up hitting it awfully hard.
Did you ever record any of those instrumentals?
I mean, we recorded, not in a studio.
Even rehearsal at home or...
Yeah, we've got rehearsal tapes when we first started, which actually consisted of a stand-up bass and a couple of guitars and a drum. Then my older brother Andy stepped in and crowded his way in and threw the other guy out and took over the bass part. And we've got tapes of us just trying to play songs at that time. Then we have some, maybe a year or so later, when we had some pretty competent members and actually did some pretty good tunes back then. A lot of instrumentals. Then we'd bring up a female vocalist and a male vocalist.
Really? What kind of material?
I'd say R&B, a lot of it.
Uh-huh.
But then we'd throw in some things from, you know, Ventures even, but primarily R&B.
And at one point, your brother Jerry was playing sax.
Yeah, yeah. He wouldn't stay to playing the sax, though. I mean, that was back when his hormones were flowing and got into puberty, and we couldn't keep him away from chasing women and stuff. And would not rehearse, so he had to leave.
But that's how you get the chicks. You'd be in a band.
Well, yeah, you know? But you got to look in advance to see that.
Uh-huh.
All he could see was the immediate future.
Couldn't see beyond the saxophone. I'm glad you made the switch with, you know, you went with a vocalist. I'm wondering what prompted that.
We had a couple of vocalists at the time before we got Jerry. We were still playing, you know, a good number of instrumentals, but there was different people in and out on vocals. And we had heard about Jerry from other people and went out and heard him playing in a local club, but at that time, he was playing with Bob Bennett, the drummer, and Rob Lynn, the sax player,
mm-hmm.
and Jerry Miller from the Moby Grape and Bobby Fuller Four, and made him an offer. We needed a different vocalist, and he took it, along with Bob and Rob.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. That combination just clicked. I mean, did you feel
really
it at
did,
the time?
Because
it sounds so spontaneous, you know? I know you guys, you probably recorded live when you were in the studio, I guess. And
well, there was a... When we first started, it was two tracks, so we didn't have a whole lot of choice. But even when it was four track, we didn't really pay a whole lot of attention to, and maybe we should have, but we didn't pay a whole lot of attention to production or even finalizing how a song might be. And you can hear that. I mean, they're not professionally done. And I know the second song we did, Psycho, we had to record that because we needed something for a flip side of The Witch. We literally wrote that after we got done playing at a place called the Red Carpet, and we stayed a little bit past when the crowd had left, knowing that we had to go into the studio the next day to record something, and that just came out. And we went in the studio, and as Carney Barton puts it, we were in and out in 45 minutes. it wasn't like overdubs and even the lyrics would change. There's, I guess, various versions of The Witch out there, and each one's got a different version of the, different lyrics.
Yeah, well, The Witch is a big one. That's the one that, I guess that still holds the record as the best-selling rock and roll single in the Northwest history. It's big.
Didn't start off that way. At first, none of the stations wanted to touch it. It was too far out. But that started actually off as a dance, you know, like more like Do the Witch.
Was there a dance? Were there dance steps to Do the Witch?
Well, we hadn't created the dance, but that was back when there were dances, like the mashed potatoes and things.
Right.
And that was the whole, this was going to be like Do the Witch. And every time Jerry would say the witch, originally I was sliding a steel up and down the strings, you know, making some kind of eerie sound. When we got in the studio, it changed from like Do the Witch to a song that's about a witch. But even then, every time he sang it, it was a little bit different. The lyrics would change.
Mm-hmm.
Things would be different every time. But that was true with all the recordings. They were never set in concrete. And a lot of them were just done to spur of the moment. I mean, he would write some lyrics real fast right there, and I'd throw some chords together, and they'd come out.
So it was just basically, it was like when you went into the studio, it was just like a photograph, a snapshot of that day, what the lyrics were like, and
that's exactly
the way you were
it.
Playing it.
And the minute we started to try to be professional with a production, the first time we really tried that is when we went to L.A. and recorded a bunch of garbage that we thought we left on the cutting room floor, and we find that it's been released. But it was stuff that none of us like. It wasn't completed, and it wasn't anything, it wasn't our sound at all. We were thinking that rather than create the sound and let the engineer somehow cope with the fact that his needles were going red and everything else, we listened to the engineers who said, don't worry about it, guys. We'll take care of it on this side. Well, they didn't. And it ended up being bad stuff. For that, we would just go in there and crank it or whatever we were going to do, and the engineer would just compensate for it and let us have our way.
Getting back to The Witch, I heard a rumor that when Pat O'Day, big DJ out there, I guess the DJ who really broke you guys, I heard that he wasn't allowed to play it before school was out. Like, he couldn't play it on the radio before 3 in the afternoon.
Yeah. Because, I mean, it was, the stuff wasn't being played then. I mean, it was a little bit too wild and, you know, not very musical, you know. It was only because people kept calling in when they heard it, when we, they heard us play it elsewhere, they would call in and ask him to play it. And he finally did, and then it went okay.
The covers that you guys do, I mean, for a lot of people, that's all they know. You know, I know a lot of people who just know Have Love Will Travel, the Sonics version, because it's so great and it's so different. As good as the Richard Berry song is, I mean, that one is just... What I'm wondering is have any of the artists that you've covered ever gotten in touch with you, say, like Little Richard or Richard Berry or any of the Motown people or anything?
Well, it was a mistake, but when Springsteen played at the Dome over here, he announced... I think he said something like, it's good to be here in the home of the Sonics. I don't mean the basketball team. And he did that just before he played Have Love Will Travel, but I think he was mistaken. I mean, he thought we wrote it, but we didn't. So.
Be it Springsteen or not, still, that's like that's the pull you have over that song. It's almost like you rewrote it. You made it your own.
Yeah, apparently. You know, I don't know if I've ever heard the original, actually. So.
Really?
I don't know how different it is.
It's pretty different. I mean, it's good also, you know? I mean, it's just a whole different feel. So who brought that song to the group then?
I don't know.
Oh.
I can't remember anything.
Did you ever bring any covers? Like, say, oh, you know, gotta do Pushing Too Hard or, you know.
Oh, I think we all did. I mean, we all had something we wanted to bring in. A lot of it, though, but like in most cases, it's what the vocalist can sing and what he feels comfortable singing. So... I think that was the guideline, is if Jerry felt he could sing it, or Rob, or whoever wanted to try it, then that would be the limitation, I think.
What were you playing? What kind of guitar was that?
For the most part, the same one I have now, actually. It's an Epiphone Riviera, which is like a Gibson 335. It was made by Gibson. And just originally a Fender amplifier, then a Sun, and I just wanted it so I could turn it to 10. And distort the power stage and the preamp stage. So it was natural distortion. In the studio, I don't know what I used. It kind of depends what happened to be laying there, if it sounded right to me.
Could you hear yourself when you were on stage? Because I don't know, I guess this is in the days before, you know, monitors and all the electronic, you know, stuff.
Yeah,
when you were
dinosaurs.
Yeah. Well, I don't mean that way so much. Things were better.
No, we didn't have monitors. Everybody at that time, you sang through what was usually a Bogan amplifier, which had four inputs, no tone controls, just volume. So your microphone goes into this one hole, and you got a volume control on it, and then the out is a 41 amp, so it's not a lot of power, and it comes out of horns. These real mid-rangey sounding University or Atlas horns. So there wasn't any cone to speakers or anything like that. And there was no monitor system. And no lights or anything like that.
So you just get as loud as you could for the
kids?
Well,
no, not necessarily as loud as we could. It really revolved around the sound. We were much, much more powerful live than we were ever in any record. It just...
Really?
Just
oh, man.
Across in that medium.
That's scary.
But live, the whole thing was... a feeling that's like the walls going in and out with your breath, you know. It somehow had to pump, and there was a certain volume level you had to reach in order to get to that point, and also to get to get the tone I wanted. And even if it meant turning my amplifier to 10 so I could get the tone I want, but somehow redirect the speakers or put something in front of it, anything, so I can get that sound. Resorting to some kind of electronic distortion.
You know, after The Witch, and then you re-released the single, you had Psycho on the B-side, and you started opening up for, you know, the Beach Boys and Jane the Americans, and, I mean, what were the crowds like? The crowds that came to see, you know, Ray Stevens and the Beach Boys and all, and you guys come out?
Very enthusiastic. Surprised us. I mean, the first one we did was down in Portland, and, I think at that time, it was when The Witch had first come out, and I think at that time they thought we were from England. And they acted like it, and it was pretty wild. But after that, when it was known where we were from, even though we were local yokels, there was still an awful lot of respect and attention. And that surprised us even. You know, we thought we'd be treated as homegrown.
How'd the main acts treat you? Are there any stories dealing with, I don't know, the Beach Boys or
Well, you know? gosh, I don't know if it was Jan or Dean, one of the two, actually sat in for a performance in a local club. But he's the only one I know of. We talked to them all, but there was nothing really said that I'm aware of. They probably thought we were a bit odd. I mean, nobody played like that at that time. There was nobody screaming. You know, and you really have to have heard Bob Bennett on drums to understand what I'm saying, because in those days you didn't mic drums like you do today. So you really had to hit them hard, particularly the bass drum, if you wanted the kind of sound that we were reaching for, which was, I mean, it had to have a lot of impact, because it wasn't there for quality. We weren't great technicians, so it better have a lot of impact. And he would literally break drum pedals. I think he was using Ludwig Speed King pedals. He would break them consistently, as well as lots of sticks and things, because he hit so hard. And nobody was doing that. So I think it was a combination of Jerry wanting to scream all the time, and Bob playing his drums as hard as you could physically play them, and then myself trying to get a distortion that went with that, or just not necessarily distortion, a feel that went with it. I think that was the essence, and nobody that we ever played with was doing quite that same thing. And I have to say, at the time, we thought we were illegitimate, that they were all playing real music, and we couldn't do that, so we were hitting our instruments.
You can hear that on, there's that live record that came out from, on one side is a show from 66, and the other one is the reunion from 72. Even from 72, now, you guys hadn't played together for years.
No.
There's some songs on there that just, you know, they're killer. The Witch, I mean, that version of that is like, might be better than the studio. I don't know, just because he's going so nuts. Everyone's going nuts
like
up there.
Yeah, maybe everybody says this, but it's really true. We were so much better live than we were in any studio. And that comes closer to it, however my guitar was out of tune during that one. But it's still, that was closer to it, how the feel really was. I mean, you really could, unless you're a brain dead, you couldn't go to one of our performances and not move your feet. I mean, if you weren't able to move your feet, you probably shouldn't be there.
You know, what's good is that all the stuff is being re-released now. Norton is putting out, I guess, the first two records.
Yeah.
With extra tracks and all, and it's sounding good. What's that? What?
Yeah, they've actually heard some other stuff, too, you know, and I listened to what they have to say, although I have to say we would be listening to some recordings that were even prior to the Sonics, when the band, as everybody else knows it, was together. I would be hearing a song and thinking to myself, no, that's not bad. That's a pretty good tune. We did a pretty good job of it. And Miriam and Billy from Norton would be, they have a real blank look in their face. And then the next song would come on, and it would be atrocious. It would be horrible. Something about it would just be bad. You know, if it was a guitar song, I would think the guitar just sucked. And they would be getting into it. I don't understand that part. They're looking at something different than I am. But they're really into the, I think, the essence of rock and things that were creative.
Paul Revere and the Raiders, they pretty much started out as instrumental also, right?
They were doing instrumentals too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even with Lindsey at first, they were still doing primarily instrumentals. The Wailers were doing instrumentals. All the local groups were. But over time, everybody got their vocalist and started that routine.
So are you still playing today?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I quit for a long time. You know, when I left the Sonics, I quit until the mid-80s. And then started and quit. But now I think I'm going to play until they cart me off. And what I play really depends on who happens to come over at the time. I like to play that, you know, hard rock if we can do that, if it's the appropriate place. But if not, I'll play anything.
Uh-huh.
It's just fun now.
So you play out at clubs and you have
I have people come to my place and play. I've got it set up with a lot of old Fender equipment and a sound system and everything else in my own house. And just different musicians come by here, and whoever shows up sort of dictates what style we'll be playing that night. But I don't go out and play any place.
What kind of stuff are you playing now? I mean, when you say hard rock.
Well, I say if you know, that's the part that's hard to play, because it's hard to play hard rock the way I'm talking about it in our living room with somebody who can't do it the way that I would like to hear it done anyway. So what it really comes down to, if somebody comes into the house playing, you know, and they're a country player, that's what we, or a singer, that's what we play is country. Huh. If it's blues, then we play blues. Lately, there's been some guys coming up who are playing mostly like 50s and early 60s rock and roll. We haven't tried to do any Sonic stuff, but we did once in the mid-80s. My brother and I were in a band with a guitar player who's now with the Kingsmen, you know, did Louie Louie, mm-hmm. and a guy that was in a band called the Liverpool Five, and then another one called Dynamics. And we tried to do Sonic stuff. In fact, we did some. We went into a studio, but it didn't. It wasn't the same. It didn't have the same feel to it. It didn't lay back right. So we couldn't even do it without the original people. So we don't even try that stuff anymore. But I'll bet you, with Bennett, particularly on drums and Rosalie singing, it'd be like falling over again. It would just be there.
Are these guys, are they still musically inclined?
I guess Bob Bennett, who lives in Hawaii, he says he plays periodically. Jerry Rosalie didn't, no. No, he was out for quite some time, and only recently he's come up to the house here a couple of times. He's up here a few weeks, he always went over some things. But that's just been this last year that he's been willing to do that. And he sounded the same to me, and
wow.
Felt like that's chaining him up or something when he started singing. Jeez.
Really? Sounding the same? Oh, man.
He did. I mean, I didn't expect that. I thought, well, the voice register would go down a bit. Plus, you know, he hasn't done it in a long time, so it's probably going to be not wanting to scream. But he only did 3 or 4 songs, and I remember them in the same key. And I don't even remember what the songs are now. But they were essentially in the same key he used to do things in. And even though we were in my living room, he was moving around like it was Jerry Lee Lewis or Little Richard or somebody. And I just thought it was amazing that he would still do that. So I know he has it. He still has the ability to do it. I just, like, it would be fun to get together and do it sometime.
Oh, that would be, boy, you'd make a lot of people happy. If I had any wish in the world, that would be just the Sonics just one more time.
That would be interesting. Once more before the grave.
What's He's Waiting About?
Well, I told Jerry last time I saw him, I never listened to a lyric he wrote, but it's about the devil.
Oh, Satan, eh?
Yeah.
So some devil-worshipping songs.
See, and I didn't understand what strychnine was about either at the time. I didn't know that was what you ingest, but... or whatever you get with it. I just didn't listen to that stuff. I still couldn't tell you the lyrics to any of those songs. But I'm not into lyrics.
Wow. That's... For some people, they know those lyrics better than their own names, you know.
Well,
but that's...
We sat in with Miriam and Billy from Norton, and myself were at a collector's home, actually, down in Tacoma, Washington, and we had sort of a jam session down there, and a local musician played, I think it was Strychnine, and I'm sure I screwed him up real big. I forgot. I used to detune on some songs, drop tune, and I don't think I dropped tune number one, and I couldn't remember. Either he was wrong or I was wrong, but somehow the song didn't come out right.
Oh, man. You just keep getting more and more fans, and as the reissues come out, you know, everybody's, like, picking up on it, and I gotta tell you, today is my birthday, and this is my birthday gift, is basically just hearing that you guys are just, that Jerry's coming over and he's singing. That's good enough for me.
Yeah, that is.
You know, that's just great news. I love hearing it. Anyway, well, thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Okay, have a good night.
Bye-bye.